We're here on Daf Tzadi Dalet Amud Beis, the second line from the top, and we're going to now analyze the shita, the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan, as far as Shinui is concerned. Om Rabbi Chia Bar Abba, Om Rabbi Yochanan, Dvar Torah, Gzela, Nishtanes, Hanishtanes, Choseres Be'eineha. Rabbi Yochanan rejects the concept of Shinui Kone on a Daraisa level. Shenemar, Veheshiv Sagzela Asher Gazal, the extra two words Asher Gazal, which until this point we understood Ke'en Sher Gazal. No. Rabbi Yochanan says Asher Gazal Mikol Makom. He always, no matter what, has to return the object that he stole, even after it was subject to a Shinui. V'im Tomar Mishnah Seinu, how would Rabbi Yochanan square with our Mishnah that if he stole wood and he converted it into a kli, he was Kona B'Shinui? Is the answer is Mishum Takona Sashovim. The answer is that the Torah doesn't recognize Kinyan Shinui and Gzela. The Chachamim instituted and established this Takona for the purpose of enticing or giving an incentive, if you will, to the Gazlan to return the object. And they said, you know what? You changed it. You exerted and expended great effort and maybe even money on this stolen object in order to enhance it. You've changed it. You still have to return it, but we're going to give you a takana, a way out. Because why would the Gazlan be? Why should we make it difficult for the life of the Gazlan to? And expect and anticipate that he would be motivated to do such a profound tshuva that he would return the object to the nigzal, even when he put so much work into it and changed the object from its original state. You know, he took wood and he made it into a table or a chair or a bed. You know, he's not going to be so motivated to return that bed, that table, that finished product, because he put in so much work and it's worth so much more. Even though according to Torah law, says Rabbi Yochanan Asher Gazal Mikol Makom, he's obligated to do so. The Rabbanon exercising and activating the principle of Hefker Bezdin Hefker, which the Gemara in Yevamos derives from various psukim in Tanakh, they were mafkia the schus of the Gazal, of the Nigzal, to demand back this object. Now, I'm wondering if we should assume that Takanas HaShovim itself proves and establishes that Hefker Bezdin Hefker is very far reaching, meaning there's a fundamental issue amongst the Achronim about the scope and the application of Hefker Bezdin Hefker. One approach has it that it is limited and circumscribed. It only applies to be mafkia zchusim, but it doesn't go a step further. The other achronim say it goes a step further, and hefker bezdin hefker means not only could bezdin take it away from Reuven, they could even give it to Shimon. Here they seem lechora at the surface of it to be exercising a more comprehensive, greater scope hefker bezdin hefker, taking it out of the possession of the nigzal, as it were, and putting it into the bialis of the gazlan. However, I don't know if you have to go that far. It could be that the gazlan, even according to Rabbi Yochanan, has the ability to be kone the chefta gazel, except for the fact that the Torah says to him, Veheshiv is Agzel. This is the famous Chiddush of Rabbi Elchanan that we mentioned in the past, that what's mafkia, what prevents the Gazlan from making a Kinyan? It's the Chiyuv Hashava. If the Rabbanon were mafkia, the Zchusim, and the monetary rights of the Nigzal to get back his object, in effect what they are doing here, what they're accomplishing is being mafkia, the Chiyuv Hashava, Mimele it belongs to the Gazlan. So it's not that they actually take it from one possession and put it into the possession of, in this case, the Gazlan. That's not what's happening. The Gemara asks, Umi Om Rav Yochanan Hachi, do we really have a consistent view in Rabbi Yochanan's frame of reference that Shinui is not Kona min HaTorah? Om Rav Yochanan Halacha Kestam Mishnah. Rabbi Yochanan is committed to Paskin like a Stam Mishnu Snan, and we have a Stam Mishnu in Chulin. If you remember, we discussed this at great length. with regard on Tzadik Gimel and Beis, with regard to Reishis Hages, that if the Yisrael was mafrish from his wool for the Kohen, as Reishis Hages, now he has a mitzvah of Nesina. The Mishnah says in Chulin Kuflam and Hey Lo Hispik Litno Lo Achetzvo Patur. If the Yisrael took the Reishis Hages that he was mafrish and he dyed it, he dyed the wool, then at that point he was Kohen B'Shinui and his potter for the mitzvah of Nesina L'Kohen, and that's a Stam Mishnah. And if Rabbi Yochanan is committed to passing like a Stam Mishnah, he must have adopted the principle of Shinui Kohen. And here we're talking about a Doraisa, we're talking about a mitzvah Doraisa of Matnas Kahuna of Reishis Hages. Omoluhu Ahu Mirabon Rabbi Yaakov Shmei. We have a teretz here of Rabbi Yaakov, Lididi Mefarshinali Li Minei. Rabbi Yochanan, I can pass on the tradition that was that I received to understand Rabbi Yochanan. Kigon Shegazal Eitzim Meshupim Vason Kalim Da'avile Shinu Yachozer Libriaso. What does that mean? Let's say we have something called Nisarim. Nisarim are called Eitzim Meshupim. This is not the raw material in its natural form of wood, but rather wood that's already been subject to some sort of process, human process of manufacturing, in which we manufactured Nisarim by taking a plane and smoothing out the wood, removing the bark or whatever else it might be, and forming planks that could be used for building. That's called a Shinui HaChozer Libriaso. No, excuse me. Well, again, it depends what we're talking about. If he stole raw bark, raw tree, and he made it into Eitzim Meshupim, that would be a Shinui She'eno Chozer Libriaso. That's an irreversible Shinui, as we discussed at great length. What he stole was Eitzim Meshupim. He already stole Nisharim, and he builds a table or a chair out of them. That's Shinui HaChozer Libriaso. And that's Shinui, Rabbi Yochanan said, he's not Kone Min HaTorah. However, in the case of a Shinui She'eno Chozer, for example, he takes wool and he dyes it. Again, there are various situations that we discussed about dyeing wool, whether or not it's reversible. But let's say it's a dye like Kola Elon, and it's irreversible. That's the subject of the Mishnah, the Stam Mishnah in Chulin, that is Poter the Yisrael from the mitzvah of Nesinas Reishis Hages L'Kohen, because that tzvia is an irreversible tzvia. That's called a Shinui She'eno Chozer Libriaso, and Rabbi Yochanan would adopt the position, says Rabbi Yaakov, that in a Shinui She'eno Chozer Libriaso, the Torah recognizes that Shinui, and therefore the Gazlan is Kona, or in this case, the Yisrael is Kona, the Reishis Hages, and he no longer is obligated to give it to the Kohen. And in our Mishnah, for example, where the Mishnah establishes at the beginning of Agozel Eitzim Vason Kelim that the Gazlan is Kona V'Shinui, that's got to be a case of Shinui She'eno Chozer Libriaso. I'm sorry. That's going to be a case of Vason Kelim of Shinui She'chozer Libriaso. That's called Gazal Eitzim Meshupim. And on that, Rabbi Yochanan says that Shinui is not Kona on a Doraisa level. It's only Kona Mishum, Takonas Chachom, Takonas Hashovim. Now, just in passing, if anyone out there is using the Masifta, I don't understand here, Masifta Ha'arad Amigimel, he talks about a Sugim Bab Metzia, about Ribis Ketsutza, whether it's Yotzeis B'dayonim or not Yotzeis B'dayonim. I'm not exactly sure of the relevancy of that discussion here in the context of Shinui Kone and the distinction we're making between Shinui She'eno Chozer Libriaso, which is Kone Doraisa, according to Rabbi Yochanan, Shinui HaChozer Libriaso, which is only Mishum Takonas Hashovim. I don't know what that has to do with Ribis Ketsutza, if somebody can enlighten me on that. In any event, Tana Rabbanan, we now want to analyze some of the features of Takonas Hashovim. The Brisa says that Agazlonim, let's say a Gazlan does tshuva and he wants to return the Gzela to its Bailim, or Malve Berivis, someone extended a loan with a clause that he would collect usury, collect ribis. And Shechziru. Now the Gazan wants to return the object, or in the case of the Malve, who violated the law of ribis and he took interest on the loan, he wants to return the interest, he's doing tshuva. The Chacham made a takana, ein mekabla mehen. We don't accept it from them. And the reason for this is going to be takonas ashovim. We want to make it a little bit easier for these gazlanim to come forward and do tshuva. And therefore the Braisa continues to say, v'amakabel mehem, if somebody accepts and receives the return of the gzela, the return of the ribis, the gzela in the case of the nigzal, or the loaf in the case of the ribis, ein ruach hachomim nocha himen. Rashi says here, divra maschal ein, that it's not chassidus. The Marsha says, why did Rashi feel compelled to add the word chassidus here? Ein nachas ruach lechachmi yisrael b'maisav. And Rashi himself in Bab Metzia uses that phrase, that the chachom are not happy with it. Why did he have to mention chassidus here? Om Rabbi Yochanan comments on this brisa that we should not accept the nigzal, should not accept the gzela, or the lova should not accept the ribis. Bimei Rebbe Nishneis Mishnezu. There was a period of time in Jewish history when gzela became rampant. You know, we know that various isurim, you know, became kal be'eneim. They became commonplace in different, respectively, in different periods of time. In the period of Rebbe, Desanya, there's a brisa that illustrates this, a little bit of a funny kind of brisa. Maisa v'adam echad shebikesh lasas tshuva. This was a professional gazla, and he wanted to do tshuva. Amralo ishta reka. Reka means you're empty, meaning if you're going to return everything you stole, you're an empty bag, you have nothing. Everything, is, even the pants that you're wearing are stolen. Imata osa tshuva filu avne chena shalcha, the belt that you, keeps your pants up, is not yours. You're an outright thief. Everything that you own is robbery. V'nimna v'losa tshuva. When he realized that in order to do tshuva, he would be required to return everything, every last stitch of clothing that he owned, every object in his living room, he decided to defer, to demur from doing tshuva. It's ba'osa shah amru, when the chachamim realized what's going on over here, that robbery is so rampant and no one is enticed or motivated to do tshuva, is they made a declaration, ha'gazlonim u'malvei ribios shechziru ein mekablamen v'amekablamen ein ruach chachamim noche heimenu. They made this takana to avoid situations in which we are omed alikar adin and the nigzal or the loaf of demand repayment. No, they have to give up on that repayment for the benefit of Klal Yisrael, so to speak, for the benefit of that generation, in order to make sure that people are not nimra, they're not inhibited from doing tshuva. We have here in Tosfos Divrei Maskil Bimei a number of different shitos. Will just in passing mention a few of them. Rabbeinu Tam is of the opinion that Rebbe instituted this takana, but only for his generation, not for any subsequent generations. The Rian Tosfos says that Rebbe did not institute a takana of Ein Mekablin, that we shouldn't receive the gzela, unless it was professional gazlonim, professional malvei beribis. In other words, individuals whose sole source of income was this violation of gzela or this violation of ribis. Then we have a third sheet amongst the Rishonim, quoted by the Sheet of Mekubetzes, and you'll also find it in the Rush here in Siman Beis. They write that this takana, not to accept the gzela, that only applies to gazlanim or malvei beribis that want to do tshuva. They want to return the gzela. There's a genuine interest on that part. But if someone doesn't come forward and say, I'm a gazlan, I want to do tshuva, but through the process of litigation of Beis Din, he was sued by the plaintiff as a gazlan, in such a case, obviously he's not doing tshuva, he didn't come forward on his own. If we have evidence to prove that he stole or that he lent beribis, we can force him to return to return what he stole. And therefore the Nebuki Yosef summarizes two conditions that have to be met in order for this takana to go into play, to be activated. Number one, it's got to be a gazlan whose parnasa, his whole life, is dedicated to robbery. That's how he supports himself. And number two, it's got to be a gazlan who sincerely wants to do tshuva and on his own initiative wants to return the gzela. Tosus himself rejects this shita. He says, every gazlan could really pull a harama and fool it, you know, he could pull the wool over our eyes. He's going to come forward, and he really has no sincere intention of doing tshuva, but he wants to save himself, you know, any possibility of having at some point down the line, he'll be forced, you know, through evidence to return, cough up the gzela. So what does he do? He comes forward, and he, you know, promises, you know, tzidkus, and he makes himself as, you know, out to be this great bal tshuva. And therefore, he's gonna activate this rule of Takonas Rebbe. That's very difficult. And therefore, Tosus is not willing to say that the din of Ein Mekabel Mimenu is limited to the case where he comes on his own initiative. The Gemara asks the following question. We have a different brisa. Meisve hiniach lohem. Here's a case where the Malva Beribis died and he left the Ribis as a Yerusha for his heirs, for his children to inherit Ribis. Now, it's a little bit embarrassing for a son to inherit from his father Ribis. That's not very comfortable. Moshe Ribis. So again, this was money, Ribis money, that was collected by the father during his lifetime. It's afal pishem yodim shehein Ribis ein chayov lahachzir. We're going to make a takana that they, the sons, don't have to be machzir the Ribis that they inherited from their father. Says the Gemara, let's be medayik in the Lashon HaBraisa, inu hu delo. Who doesn't have to return the ribis? That's the children, because in a sense they're less guilty here of any crime. They just no crime of their own. This is what they inherited. Ha'avihem. It's implying that if it was the father himself, chayav lahachzir, he would indeed be obligated to replace and return the ribis to the lova. And that seems to contravene this very brisa that establishes the takana and formulates the takana of Rebbe not to accept the ribis when it's returned. Lechora, we can answer this very simply by saying that this brisa of hiniach lemaviyam oshal ribis is talking in a different period of time subsequent to the dar of Rebbe. The Gemara answers, bedinu daviyam nami einu chayv lahachzir. The brisa wants to tell me a chiddush about the children. But Einam Chinami, the father himself, would not have to return the ribis because the takana that we mentioned to entice him and motivate him to come forward and do tshuva. V'hadik tani bidid hu. Why did the brisa formulate it in terms of the children that they, as heirs, did not have to return the ribis to the lova mishum de kaboyle misnei seifa? This is an introduction to the seifa, which discusses a unique halacha that applies to the heirs and doesn't apply to the father. What does it say in the Sefer? Hiniach lem aviyam para vitalis v'chol davar misuyam. We have certain objects that you can look at the object and identify it. It has a, you know, a little bit of a unique feature, and therefore everyone could know this para or this talis belongs to so and so. Davar misuyam, the public recognizes that this chefetz belongs to so and so. And in the case of ribis, let's say the malve received as ribis for a loan a para or a talis or a davar misuyam, and now he dies and he leaves it over to the yarshim. So the brayis in the sefer establishes chayovim lahachzir. In this case, even though normally we would say under most circumstances the reisha applies and the yarshim do not return. The ribis of the loaf, but here they have to return it. Why mipnei kvod avihem? Because since everyone knows, it's public knowledge that this is ribis, if they continue to hold on to that ribis, that is kind of a memory device. It's an insulting, humiliating to the memory of their father that, you know what, they're holding on to ribis that came illegally, criminally, by their father. Everyone's talking about their father, not forgetting the fact that he was a loan shark and he took interest. Now, the Gemara says in Kiddushin Lamed Aleph that the mitzvah of Kibud Av Ha'em applies even li'achar moso, even after the father's death. I mean, that's the source for Kaddish and the fact that a yosom has to say Areni Mishkova, Kafos Mishkova, and other dinim that generate a chiyuv and express a chiyuv kovid vis-a-vis the parents. Here, even though technically the yorshim, the sons, do not have to return this ribbis, this para, this talis, this tov mesuyim to the lova, but nevertheless they're obligated to do so for a different reason, not a dini mominous reason, but a din of kibud av. Is once the sefer had to discuss the unique situation of the sons of the heirs, the yorshim who are chayv in kibud av, is tonerei nami bididhu, in order to maintain symmetry. The Bryce already in the Reisha discussed the Yorshim, but even though the din of not having to return the Lova to the Lova, his Ribis, applies even to the father. The Gemara now asks the following question: is there really Kibud Av in this case? Umipnei kvod avim chayov lahachzir ikri kan. The standard and the condition for Kibud Av Ha'em is derived from a pasuk of Inasi bi'amcha lo sa'ar, which means there's an Isur Klola and a Chi of Kibud towards Nasi, but it's got to be Nasi Bi'amcha. What's Bi'amcha? The Ni Sha'ose Maisa Amcha. Someone who is observant and is dedicated to fulfill the mitzvahs. But an Avayon who violates the Averis of the Torah, he's not considered also Maisa Amcha. And that condition that applies, for example, to the Isur Klola applies by analogy to the mitzvah of Kibud Av Ha'em. And if the father's a Rasha, you're not chayiv in kovet. However, the Rambam sheet in Hilchos Matan Perek Vav is a unique sheet that he holds that even if the father's a Rasha, the son is still obligated in kibud. But the answer is that's only b'chaya of. Even though we extend kibud av li'achar moso, but that's not in the case of a Rasha. So the Gemara answers, Kida Omer Pinchas, why are the Yorshim Chayiv and Kovet Avim, even though the father's a loan shark and he lends beribis and he's an avario and he's not an osa maisa amcha? The Gemara says, Biyasa Tshuva, we're talking about a malve beribis, the father's a malve beribis, but he did tshuva. And that's Rav Pinchas' statement to explain a mission in Chagig on Daf Chavav. The Gemara borrows it here and applies it here, cut and paste. Hachinami here too, be sha'asa tshuva. Wait a minute, says the Gemara. If the father did tshuva, why is he still holding on to the ribbis? He should have come forward to return the ribbis to the lovi asa tshuva. My boy kabei, boy le'adure. He should have returned the ribbis. And don't answer me that maybe he wanted to return the ribbis, but the lova refused to accept the ribbis because takanas chachamim. Because that doesn't make any sense. If he was machzer and they didn't accept it, then it would no longer be a gnai for the children to hold on to this famous, well-known, and identifiable object. And that you'll see in Tosas Dibur Maskil E. Asa Tosas goes on and says that Bedover Mesuyam, if he returns it, then they should be Mekabalat Mishum Kvodo. Even though normally there's this Takana Rebbe of Ein Mekabalan also. In any event, we come back to ask the question, if the father did tshuva, why is he still holding on to the ribbis? And the Gemara answers that he died shelo hispik lahachzir ad shemes, before the death caught up to him, before he got a chance to return the ribbis. But he did tshuva. There's a chiyuv of kibud av ha'em, and therefore the davar mesuyim, a davar mefursom, that's nikar, the children are obligated to return it to the lov, even though normally they would not be obligated to do so. Toshma, the Gemara now asks the following question. We have a brisa that seems to contradict this principle of takanas hashavim. What does the brisa say? Hagazlonim umavle umalve beribis af al pisha gavu machzirin. Now, we'll soon see that the emphasis here is on Malvei Beribis, not on Gazlonim. In Malvei Beribis, there are two stages. There's a stage in which the Lova and the Malva come to some agreement, And the Malva in this particular case, as a Malva Rivis stipulates, exactly how much money the lov is going to have to pay back, the additional money of interest. Okay, he hasn't yet collected it, and in the second stage, he collected it. And that's the Afal Pisha Gavu. First, before the Gemara is going to ask its question about Takonas HaShovim, the Gemara points out that the word Gazlonim here is out of place. I can understand Malvi Beribis, the Afal Pisha Gavu, meaning even after they collected the Ribis, they still have to return it. And how much more so if they haven't yet collected the ribbis, they have to rip up the shtar, that contractual agreement in which the lov and the malv agreed that the lov will pay ribbis and not collect based on that shtar. So let's rip up the shtar. But in the case of Gazlonim, what's the afal pi shegavu over here? Well, what's Iko? Iko means where does Afal Pi Shegavu play a role over here? Why did the Braisa add Gazlonim here, Afal Pi Shegavu? He guzzle, guzzle, he low guzzle, low guzzle. If you're talking about Gazlonim, then you're talking about someone who already stole the object. So what does it mean Afal Pi Shegavu? This Afal Pi Shegavu is only meaningful with regard to Malvi Beribis. So the Gemara answers yes. You have to really cut down this Bryce. And here the Rishonim understand that Malvi Beribis is a subcategory of Gzela. It's not just a separate Isur of Neshach and Ribis, but it's also an extension of Gzela. Because the Bryce says, who are these Gazlonim that we're talking about? They are the Malvi Beribis. In any event, getting back to the Bryce, Afal Pisha Gavu Machzirin. Even though the Malva has already collected the ribbis, nevertheless he has to return it to the Lova. And that undermines the very principle that we've been operating with, namely Takonas HaShovim, that in order to entice the Malva to do tshuva, we say to him, you know what, you don't have to pay back the ribbis. And here it says, Gavu Machzirin. Amri the Gemara answers, Machzirin V'ein Mekabla Mehem. Meaning that the Malva himself, in the process of tshuva, has to come forward and offer to return the ribbis to its rightful original owner, to the Lova. But we, meaning the Lova, should not receive it from him. So the Gemara says, Lama elo lama machzirin. What's the meaning of the significance of machzirin? Lotzeis yidei shamayim. Now, what does this mean? Lotzeis yidei shamayim. So the Pashtus. In Lotzeis Yidei Shamayim, the way the Yamshel Shlomo explains it is, as part of the process of tshuva, the Malva Beribis should make this external effort, so to speak. He should do this action of offering to pay. But the Torah writes that in this case, we are Mekabel the Ribis back. The Lova should be Mekabel the Ribis, in order to facilitate the Gazlan, or the Malva Beribis, to fulfill at least what is Lotzei Sidei Shamayim. And what the Gemara is answering here, according to the Torah, is that if the Malva Beribis is motivated to be Yotzei Yidei Shamayim, to clear his record and do a full-fledged tshuva, then he should return the Ribis to the Lova, and the Lova should accept it. If, on the other hand, the Malva Beribis wants to return the ribbis only because he's chayev b'dinei Adam, because he thinks he's obligated to do so, which logically he is then ein mekabla mimenu. Then we should not accept it from him, and we should activate and apply the takonas hashovim. Toshma, we have another kashm from a different braisa. Haroim v'hagaboim v'hamuchzin. These are three categories of people who are criminals, and we have to hope that they want to do tshuva. It's going to be very challenging. First, we have the roim. These are the shepherds who bring the animals into sodos acherim, and they violate the iser of gzela. Tosu siya dibra maskil kan, it's on tzadihei, has a slightly different approach. He says that these are roim gozli mibali behemos es agizos es acholov. Notice they don't go as far as to take the flock and graze it in someone else's territory, somebody else's sada. But what they do is they steal from other animal owners the some of the shearings and the chalav. And in doing so, they save themselves money, because the roeh, in the context of his profession and the monies, the wages that he's paid in his employment as a roeh, he's got to dig up giza and chalav. So it's he has vested interest in stealing them. To say that he's going to take the shepherd, the flock, and shepherd it into sodas acheros, that's already ein adam chote v'lo lo. In any event, whatever the case is, the roeh is called a gazlan. The second category is a gabai. Gabai was appointed by the king to collect taxes, and what he did often was he would collect more than the taxes that the king authorized him to collect. An extra surplus he would pocket for himself. A similar concept applies to muhsin. Muhsin were the tax collectors who collected, let's say, meches. You know, if somebody has a trade, or he is an import and export, he also will pocket more than what he has to pocket, and that's called gzela. Chuvasan kosher. These people, these three categories of people, are doing this professionally, and how do they do tshuva? How will they return the gzela? They were gozel es harabim. They don't know who to return it to. Like, there's this famous story about the Chafetz Chaim that had the grocery store, and he felt that something was awry with his measurements and, you know, with his weights and scales, and therefore there were people who had been cheated, and he had overcharged them, but he didn't know who they were. So he opened up his store and said everybody should come and take for free, you know, flour or whatever it was in that case, and he felt that hopefully that person who was cheated would come and take it. In any event, how can these three categories of roim, gaboim, and muhsin fulfill their obligation of tshuva? To who will they return the stolen when they were? They don't have a list. Is therefore, says the Braisa, umachzirin limakirin. What they should do is those people they know, they could identify that they stole from, then for those people they should return it. And you see clearly that we do accept hashavas agzela. That's exactly what the Braisa is obligating the roim, the muhsin, to do. Ami the Gemara answers, machzir v'yei mekablam. And again, these gazlonim should make the initiative, and they should come forward and offer to pay back. And why do they do so? Lo machzirin, lotzis yidei shamayim. But the nigzal should not accept it, because the takonis hashavim. Wow, this is a fantasy. This is a great opportunity, a dream kind of tshuva. They offer to pay back, and they get the money as well. Nobody's going to accept the money. We're all chassidim. The Odin. Furthermore, Amos Sefer. Let's look at the Sefer of this very same Raisa. And there's a case of damim shegozlu bnei adam v'she'ein makirin is yashvem tzachrei tzibur. If they stole monies from the public, then what they should do is they should, you know, dig cisterns for water. They offer this water supply for the rabbi, for the public, and hopefully the nigzolim will also enjoy the benefit, and that's how they fulfill their chiyuv hashavas agzela. But anyway, you see clearly from this price that there is a chiyuv hashava in such a way that the nigzal will receive his payment and pocket it, hold on to it. It's not just lotzei sidei shamayim. The Gemara answers, elo kasha kan kodem takona kan liachar takona. This was the answer that we wanted to pull off earlier. That if we assume that the Takonis HaShovim was instituted by Rebbe for one particular period of time, then before that Rebbe made that Takona, then they have to return and we accept it from them. But the Braisa that says that we don't accept that, that's Liachar Takona. Now the Gemara offers a second answer. Hashad the Amrav Nachman B'she'ein Gzela Kayemes is, according to Rav Nachman, when was this takana in what scenario, what situation was this takana applied, establishing that we don't receive their hashavas gzeila. That's only kshein gzeila kayemes. When the original stolen object is gone, it's lost, even though they have to pay domim, the takana was made that we don't accept their dogim, their domim, their monies. However, if the original stolen object is there, is still in the world, then the gazlan has to return that object. The nigzal has rights, and we would never mafkir those rights to receive the object. Therefore, filu tema idi v'idi liachar takana. The Gemara says, in the light of Rav Nach, we could say that both brisos are talking liachar takana, and nevertheless lo kasha, there's no stira, even though the takana is in effect, it's in operation, it's active. Kan, in the case of the brice of Roim, Gaboim, and Muchsin, it's Bigzela Kayemes, that which they stole is still in existence, and therefore the Takonis Hashem doesn't apply, and therefore we can receive, and we have to receive, the object that they stole in return. But Kan, the brice that says we're not Makabel, because the Takonis, that's Ksheein Agzela Kayemes. And therefore there's only a chiyuv damim. That's where the Chacham applied the principle of we don't accept those damim. The Gemara says, wait a minute, we just had a story in which we were given the background and the motivation for this whole takon of Rebbe of Ein Mekabel Mihem. And what was the story? The story was about this gazlan. His wife said to him that if you do tshuva, you'll have to return even the avnet, even the belt that you're wearing. For avnet gzeila kayemesi, the avnet that he stole is still alive and well. And you're telling me that takonas Hashem doesn't apply, according to Rav Nachman, if the object that was stolen is still intact. The Gemara reinterprets the story. She never meant to say literally the avnet itself is stolen. My avnet to may avnet, the value of the avnet. That's what she said. You're going to have to pay the domim of the avnet. And that's when Rebbe stood up and he made the takana. The Gemara raises an objection to Rav Nachman. V'chol heichad gzeila kayemes lo ovid rabbanan takanta. Is this really true that if the object that was stolen is still intact, then the chiyuv of the gazlan to return the object is still intact, and there's no takana of shavim to be mafkir that chiyuv hashava? Varei morish, the classical case of takanas hashavim is morish, meaning he stole a piece of a beam and he built up a bira, you know, some sort of sophisticated building. The gzeila kayemesi, the morish, the board or the beam that he stole is still in existence. Usnan, and yet the Mishnah testifies, Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgudah testifies, al amorish hagozel shebno bebira sheyitol es domov neitakonas hashovim, that the Chacham was sakin, he doesn't have to return, he doesn't have to take apart this bira, this great big palace, this building piece by piece until he can finally free up the beam and return it, but the beam is still in existence, and yet takonas hashavim applies. The Gemara answers: Shani hasam de kevon de ikap seda de bira shavu rabbanan kidalesa. In a case where there's a tremendous hefsed here, because he's going to have to take apart this whole constructed building, then the rabbanan made it, equated it to the level of the gzela, the chefza gozel is gone. Kidalesa, it doesn't exist anymore. They treated and defined, or shall we say categorized, the Morish as if the original Gzela Morish doesn't exist anymore, and they exempted the Gazlan from returning the Morish. Oh, but now the question is, so why does he have to pay Damim? I mean, after all, you know, in Takonas HaShovim, the Takona was to entice the Gazlan, make it easier for him to do tshuva. He doesn't have to pay out of pocket. And the answer is, says Rashi, the Maskel Mishum, that since the Gzeil itself is still in existence, it's in the Bira, as far as Hashavas HaDom is concerned, there's no Hefsay to the Bira, so to the extent in which the Gazan would lose the entire Bira by dismantling it piece by piece, that's where the Takonas HaShavim comes into play and is activated. But nevertheless, when we translate his chiyuv of hashava to donim, as we've discussed at great length, that veishuv gzeila means either the gzeila itself, or if impossible, the object is gone, at least pay its money, its value in cash and currency, that still remains, because that's not going to undermine this entire bira and force the gazlan to take apart the bira. So that's, there are two dinim in the takonis hashavim. One dimension of the takonis hashavim is that the object itself in this particular case of bira doesn't have to be returned intact. The other dimension, that normally a gazlan doesn't have to pay damim when the object is gone, that doesn't apply here, because we can really go back to the ikar din of Eishim's Exel Shal Gazal Narvas. We're afraid that the gazlan is not going to come forward because he doesn't want to take apart his bira. Okay, don't take apart the bira. Have your cake and eat it. We can reconcile this theory. The Torah says Eishim's Exel, and the Takonis Hashavim says you don't have to take apart your bira, return the gzela. The answer is HaKosav HaShlishi is pay its damim. And if not for Rashi, we could have argued that when the Gemara says Kidaleka, it's as if the gzela doesn't exist anymore, that's straight across the board. And therefore, after the Takonis Rebbe, if the object is gone, the gazlan doesn't even have to pay the damim of Marish. The Mishnah says he pays the Dmei Marish. That was before the Takon of Rebbe. That's a possibility. Okay, Rabosai, we're here on Daf Tzadihei Amud Aleph. And we'll stop here. Mirtz Hashem, in the next year, we'll continue with the case in the Mishnah of Gazal.